This podcast is a Bendigedig Media production.
Hi, I'm David Cottrell, and you are listening to a Touchline Rant podcast.
Episode 212 of the Touchline Rant podcast. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you for joining us again. This week, it is a two-man squad. We are down to the bare bones. We are West Ham in a Europa League semi-final. We are Arsenal playing half-fit players. This evening, it is myself and the wonderful Luke. How are you doing, Luke?
I'm very well. The description is what we are right down to the bare bones, and I think we are taped together. Like, I'm wondering, you know, am I Roy Keane? Am I Haaland? Where am I? Which of Dave Boost's legs am I? Which one am I, Steve? That's where I am now.
No, well, we will endeavour to make up for the lack of numbers with just extra quality and great content that you can really measure. Yeah, and well, you know, and a hell of a lot of professionalism. And
known for it.
Yeah, and hopefully no dogs this week.
No. I mean,
although I am playing with fire because my dog is by my side sleeping right now. She's in the room. But my wife is home now, so there's no risk of her coming home without her keys.
There is a part of me, especially because, as listeners to this podcast will not be privy to, we're also on Zoom at this time. So if that dog jumps for whatever reason, I know what you're going to do. And now all I'm hoping, like, I'm considering playing, like, white noise. Directly into the speaker, just like get a dog whistle.
Oh, well, you know, there we go. That could be the quality, the extra livener,
professionalism
the podcast.
We've come full circle.
If we do feel like we're just talking dross for the next half an hour, then perhaps we can liven it up with a dog segment at the end. Yeah. So let's kick off with our first topic, which is the arrival of Ten Hag. Eric, it's been reported this week that Eric Ten Hag will be coming to Manchester sooner than the end of the season, as in the end of sort of the players being around, not the end of the Prem season. He won the Eredivisie with Ajax last weekend. I can't remember who they beat, but they beat them 5-0, so that's pretty decent. And he also won the Dutch Cup too, so he finishes on a high with Ajax, leaving on it with a double. He has had his contract terminated, I believe, with Ajax on a sort of mutual agreement so that he can leave earlier. And obviously with Ranić taking the Austrian job as well, then that's something that kind of all melds together quite nicely. So he'll be installed for a couple of weeks before they start going off on their pre-season tours and stuff like that.
So it's an interesting move, Brian.
It is. I think it shows a level of commitment. But Luke, what do you think is going to be first thing he'll pick up out of his in-tray? What's the first thing he's got to deal with when he gets to United?
Lingard out now.
Oh, right, okay.
That would be my first thing.
And when you say that, do you say that from a point of view of a fan who has become disenfranchised with Lingard potentially, or are you on Lingard's side and you want him to leave because he needs to play football, or where are you coming from with that?
I think that the way his family reacted on social media and what they said, if you are a professional at your whatever chosen profession is, if you're a professional, you don't allow that situation to happen.
Yeah, I believe it was his brother.
Yeah,
that posted.
I believe so.
I can't believe that his brother would have done it without him knowing.
Exactly. And this is the issue.
And if he did know that he was going to do it, why wouldn't he stop him?
It's a bit weird. And then it's the whole him posting pictures of him as a little kid in training, wearing his United top and
meeting Ronaldo.
I'm a United fan. That's fine. That's not a problem. There's a lot of people who are Manchester United fans. I don't want most of them playing on my right wing either, Jesse. It's not about who you support. You can post a picture up. Well, that's fine then. If that's your level of saying, of course I'm committed. Why wouldn't I be committed? Mm-hmm. I support them. Yeah, that's fine. But we don't want the Sikhs that sit by the dugouts, who are well known at Old Trafford, who are sat there. You know, we don't want them playing on the pitch either. They support United. I support United. I don't want to play on the wing. It's almost. I felt it almost as if he was saying, "Well, it came off very arrogant to me."
If you haven't seen the post, basically, it's reportedly one of Jesse Lingard's family members. We believe it's his brother. It was after the last home match at Old Trafford, where players like Mata got a run out and a send off for his last game. Matic the same. Cavani got pitch time towards the end because he's leaving in the summer. I feel like there was one more, but I can't put my finger on who it was. But basically, the family member responded with just a story on Instagram, basically saying it was a disgrace the way that the United had treated Lingard and not giving him the same respect that they were showing to other players. It was just a complete lack of respect.
Devil's advocate, I do get it. Jesse Lingard deserves a send-out in front of the Old Trafford fans in more than Cavani.
Yes.
More than...
But Cavani is popular now.
Yes. This is maybe Lingard didn't play for his own good. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Jesse, don't get ahead of yourself. You are not Ronaldo. Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Jesse Lingard's done a lot for us. He's a good player. He is. He's just the first thing I would do. The issue is, I just think now that also one thing that Jesse Lingard did that annoyed me, or not annoyed me actually, that's made me a bit go, eh? And everyone will know exactly what I mean. when he said, what he tweeted about Mark Noble. When he said, he took me under his wing. What? You're a 28-year-old man. What do you mean, took you under his wing? Well, you're a 28-year-old man. You shouldn't need to be under someone's wing. You're a professional footballer.
Yeah, and this is also...
Manchester United. Yeah. You're going to West Ham.
Yeah, it's also a player that's perennially been out on loan as well. So it's not as if he's not used to it.
Yeah. He had a good few years. I mean, he did well at Birmingham when he went there. Then he had a good few years running the first team. But basically, what's happened, like, from looking at it from a standpoint, is no different to what's happened with Darren Fletcher, with Johnny Evans, with Chris Smalling, with all of these players over the years, John O'Shea, Phil Neville, these players, Nicky Butt. I could go on. These players who have come through our youth system, got to a certain point and the club has gone, we need to look in a different direction.
They either outgrow their usefulness for the team or they don't meet the required level anymore. And that's not to say that Jesse Lingard couldn't still do a job, because clearly he had a cracking season at West Ham last season.
Yeah, he did.
And he made a difference for them.
He went on loan. He would have wanted to have gone back to West Ham, and West Ham would have wanted him. 100%. It hasn't happened. Keep your head. It's a year left. Get on with your job. Do what you need to. Turn up to training. Turn up on time. Don't cause a problem. Just crack on. Get on with it.
Show you're a good professional.
Yeah, be a professional. do your job, and then go home. And at the end of the year, your contract will end and you are free to negotiate with whomever you wish.
Indeed. So Ten Hag's in.
Get him
up. He sat at his new desk. He sat at his desk at Carrington. He's probably asking to bring in something, I don't know, maybe a bit sleeker. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe something from IKEA or a fancy
IKEA.
Looks
like an IKEA, man.
Is there a fancy IKEA? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe he's doing that. He sat there. He's fucked off Lingard. What's his next thing? He's then got to think of. I saw an article this week that said he needs to make 6 transfers in, and they need to be your first team quality. I mean, I think any team in the Premier League would love to have 6 first team quality players brought in over a summer. But what I'm going to ask you, 6 first team quality players in one go, is that going to disrupt things?
I mean, at this point, I don't think it matters.
Yeah, well, and also I guess the flip side of that is there's at least 6 leaving.
Exactly. There's a lot leaving. If Ten Hag comes in and he said, I need 6 first team signings, and they went, oh, I'm not sure. Either literally, I cannot do any worse than you already are.
Yeah, it's just, but also I believe he's only got a fairly, well, I say modest in the biggest of inverted commas, but a fairly modest budget for Manchester United of 100 million. So
if
he needs to plug those gaps with 100 mil, he's going to have to do almost spending like Newcastle did in January, where they need to be looking at, you know, players that do the jobs that he needs to do rather than just spunking cash on a player because they've got a name.
I don't believe I've said this on the podcast. Forgive me if I have. But I think what I do is Ten Hag. Lingard's gone. Pogba is not to be near the first team in recovery. Pogba is to recover elsewhere. Continue your recovery wherever you want. You can do it in Dubai, as far as I'm concerned, but it's not going to be at Carrington. Those two gone. Say goodbye to, you know, get rid of all the other players, right? Blah, blah, blah. What you do, in my opinion, the first things I would do is who I would sell. Dean Henderson, I would be dangling in front of Newcastle United like you would not believe. Like,
yeah, a Newcastle United friend who is
it's perfect.
For a little while. You, I think it's perfect, yeah.
It's Dean Henderson is too good to sit on the bench, but he's not good enough to play in goal for the level that United now need at this point in time.
Well, De Gea's just shown that he can do it still.
Yeah,
you know.
De Gea, he definitely has his faults. But right now, out of the two, you would definitely play De Gea, 100% play De Gea, if they're your options. So at that point, Dean Henderson, when that is the decision that we both, as Manchester United fans, think is the correct thing, play De Gea, that leaves Dean Henderson being too good to sit on our bench. So he needs to go. Dangle in front of Newcastle because he's going to be their number one if he goes in, which is harsh. Dupravka has been good, but Henderson, I believe, is a step up. If it works as well, you've got a young English talent in goal. You can build from there. You can market that. Do you know, Newcastle suddenly become, potentially in the next couple of years, if Dean Henderson starts and performs and does well, they could have England's number one. Potentially. Obviously, I'm not saying this is it. He could be shit.
Well, I mean, the first and second choices are potentially being, could be one of them, two of them could be relegated this season.
Yeah.
England, Pope and Pickford. So,
yeah, you know. It's a lot. I'd also make a statement and I'd sell Harry Maguire.
That's bold. I wouldn't go as far to sell him. But I think the captaincy definitely needs to be rethought.
I think he's become a lightning rod for criticism. And I would sit him down and say, you have not been at your best, but nobody has. You've received far more criticism than anyone else. It's probably not been deserved, as you know, for the most part, if you're looking at other players. Like, we've had other players who've been shit. Let's not pretend that Maguire's been a bad apple. No,
No.
Bruno Fernandes has not been as good. Cristiano Ronaldo, despite how good he is, has had it in patches. You know, that no one's covered themselves in glory this season. No, literally nobody in our team.
Yeah, you're right.
And there's not a single one. But I would just say to him, look, but you are the focal point now. You're the lightning rod of criticism. You are brilliant. You were brilliant for England. You know, blah, 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 blah. But you have to go. You absolutely have to go.
Yeah.
Then, again, it would be difficult, but I think it would be I just think he needs to leave the club now. I don't think it's enough that he loses the armband, because I think it becomes even more then. The pressure's even more on him.
Mm.
Because not only, there'll be pressure anywhere, but if he goes and he goes to, say, Everton stay up and they bring in Harry Maguire and he becomes like Phil Jagielka. He's a good defender, Harry Maguire is a good defender, but he just cannot do it at United anymore. So I get him gone. Then Barcelona, De Jong is such an obvious signing for Manchester United, and it's doable. De Jong could make, because it's Man United, they're going to pay him more money than he's on at Barca. Let's be honest, it's going to happen. They'll offer him at least no money lost. They cannot offer him Champions League football, but the way Barcelona go in, I mean, they literally be like, do you want to go out in the groups or do you want to not be in it and maybe win the Europa?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
You know, unless Messi comes back, but that's thing for another time. Barca are also cash strapped, as you eloquently described a few episodes ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the Barcelona financial situation. They are cash strapped. If Man United came in and went, look, we'll give you 100 million, or even let you 90 million. We'll give you 90 million for De Jong, or 70 million plus additionals in installments. Barca would be like, fuck me, it's actual money. It's like actual money. It's not a 3-year extension for a defender that we don't actually want.
Absolutely, all. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
It's actual money. It makes sense for everyone. If Ten Hag is back correctly, because my next phone call then would be like, right, so the midfield is not sorted. There's still work to be done, but I've got a first teamer in. Donny van de Beek is now coming back from Everton off his loan. De Jong and van de Beek played with each other at Ajax. They play for each other at the national side, or they do when van de Beek is picked. But they play for each other on the national side. They are back together at club level with the manager from Ajax.
Yeah.
The next call is, you need to replace Harry Maguire. Ring, ring. Hello, is that Juventus? We're getting the band back together.
Can we have Matthijs de Ligt, please? Indeed, yeah.
You bring him in and you install him at the back and you go, Ten Hag, de Ligt, De Jong, van de Beek. Come on, potentially, if he wants to, and he can, because you can get rid of Martial, Mata's wages are off the books, Matic's off the books, Pogba's wages are off the books, sell Dean Henderson, potentially look to sell Wan-Bissaka, although I don't think we actually need to. Cavani's wages are off the books. I'd extend Ronaldo for an additional year if he takes a pay cut and get his wages down a little bit more. You could sell Martial, get all these, they're all stacking up. Potentially, you could go in for Anthony as well and have more creativity in and tell Rashford that he's got half a season to sort his shit out. That's my first day there, Steve.
Well, you are piling on to the workload of Erik ten Hag, who I think's already got a difficult job going in anyway.
No wonder he's fucking started early. The amount of shit he's...
Yeah, he's told his wife he's cancelling the holiday this year.
I've literally just had the text. He's listening in live and he's just texted me and he's just sent me WTF.
Can you put that in a spreadsheet for me, please?
And a picture of Jesse Lingard flipping me off.
All right, well... To save criticism from people saying the two Man United fans have hijacked the podcast and just spoken about Man United for nearly half of it, we'll move swiftly on. I'd like to say that below Man United, but it's not, unfortunately. Just above Man United in the table, Spurs and, because let's face it, United have completely fucked Champions League now. Yeah. Spurs and Arsenal have been battling for fourth spot. Last night, in fact, Arsenal capitulated completely, and Spurs fans around the country have never celebrated a goal from Newcastle more in their lives.
Arsenal were like a canary in a mine.
It was unbelievable. I didn't watch the first half. I caught the second half. And Arsenal had absolutely no composure. Not only on the pitch, but also from Arteta. He looked like he was losing his mind.
My uncle had Parkinson's, sadly, and Arsenal get like he'd got towards the end of the season when they could potentially do something of note. You physically watch it. Like, my uncle trying to butter bread is like Arsenal's footballers when they could potentially win something.
Yeah.
They just can't cope, mate. It's just...
they just can't butter the bread. But you're right. And it was spoken about a lot. Obviously, Wenger failed to get Champions League in his last couple of seasons, didn't he? Or is it just after he left?
He failed to get anything, mate. He won't even get emails towards the end of his tenure.
But... they struggle, but they haven't had Europe this season at all. I was actually talking to my friend who's an Arsenal fan. We went for a dog walk this afternoon, and we were talking about the squad and where they're at. And Arsenal fans, if I take my friend as a lightning rod, they're excited about what could happen with some of the players that they've brought in. Arsenal, Arteta brought in the likes of Ben White, Saka really coming on, Martinelli a little bit coming into his own, potentially Nketiah towards the end of the season. And that's quite a nice core of English talent.
Yeah.
Ramsdale, obviously, as well. But just so frustrated that there are still players like Tavares at the club who, people are calling him a tornado. He's so chaotic. You had a player like that already before with Guendouzi, who they shipped out on loan. And weirdly, he was...
Granit Xhaka.
They've still got Granit Xhaka. But apparently, Guendouzi is having an absolute stormer of a season. He's in Ligue 1 in France. And
Montpellier, I want to say.
Yeah, possibly. But he's been making the France squad. And you think about the competition in the midfield for France. And flipping Guendouzi's playing in it. And you play him for Arsenal, and he's a red card waiting to happen.
I'm telling you, they are cursed. Because I'd love to say that this could actually be next season. If Arsenal, let's say Arsenal finish fifth. Yeah? Arsenal finish fifth. They could use this in the same way that I would need to as a man who used to run marathon distances and does not anymore. I don't even walk them anymore. I could not just stand up now and go, right, nice one, mate, and go run a marathon. Couldn't happen.
Yeah.
They could lose next season after their year out of Europe as they're easing their way back in. They finished poorly the last two seasons. They're going to finish minimum of fifth. I believe they can't finish lower than fifth.
I don't think so.
We could be wrong, but...
I think you're right. I think the gap between... Because we're currently sixth, but could be taken over by West Ham still, I think, potentially.
Yeah, I don't think Arsenal can finish any lower than fifth. Basically, anyone listening to this podcast who's now going, oh, yeah, they could. Oh, get a life.
Why do you want that?
Yeah, whatever. They're probably going to finish fifth. Arsenal could then go into it, and it's their training run. We've got to ease back into this. So they go into Europa. They could have a decent run at it. Potentially even get to another final.
Well, I think any Prem team that enters into the Europa League, so that's someone in the top seven and in the Premier League, whether that's by finishing fifth or sixth or by dropping out of the Champions League, they should be challenging for the Europa League.
Look,
hands down, there should be no questions asked.
100%, 100%. They should definitely. As West Ham have shown this year,
absolutely.
They can have
and West Ham have got a much smaller squad than Arsenal, and far less quality. I think
the only time that I just want to find a way that Manchester United can finish in the Europa Conference position, because I found out the other day the final's in Prague.
Oh,
that's
boy.
All I'm saying.
Yeah, that would be nice.
That's
we
all
might
I'm saying.
Do. I mean, we could well end up there. I mean, to be honest,
it's a midweek game in Prague, Steve.
Oh, mate, a touchline rant live podcast in Prague. That would be so
and final. Let's be honest,
it'd be so beautiful. But Arsenal's misery is Spurs's victory.
Yeah,
nearly. Spurs are now sat in fourth place. I believe they're 1 point ahead of Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
So all they need to do now, they're in the driving seat. All they need to do is finish, beat their win their last game, which would include beating bottom of the table Norwich City, already relegated.
Already relegated.
Yeah. Whereas Arsenal on the last day of the season have got to play Everton.
If people could, like in my head, then I literally saw the meme where it's like, so you're saying there's a chance? Like, Ian Wright somewhere going, so you're telling me it's not quite over yet?
No, and I think Arsenal fans need to hold on to that, because what I was going to say, I would say for Arsenal fans listening, the glimmer of hope I would say is Spurs are called Spursy for a reason. And also, Norwich, although they are down and it has been a fairly solid banker for people, for most teams this season in the Premier League, Norwich, I think, have started playing with a little bit more abandon and maybe a bit more freedom. They've certainly started scoring. They've still lost quite a lot of the games, but they've still managed to, I think they've managed to score in more games recently than before it was confirmed they were relegated. So, you know, it only takes a goal here or there, or them to come out of the blocks quickly.
I mean, you could
get Spurs up, and you know, maybe that would happen. But I mean, arguably, Arsenal still do have the harder of the two fixtures, because Everton's safety isn't secured after they didn't manage to secure it this weekend. What they were playing, was it Palace they played this weekend? Or that? No, that's who they're playing tomorrow. Mm. Who did they play at the weekend and they proper shit the bed? And they got two players sent off. Oh, it was fantastic. I've never seen anything like... Oh, but by the way, just before I'm not going to talk loads about Everton, but I just need to say this right now. Solomon Rondon is one of the worst players I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I used to really like Solomon Rondon when he played for West Brom. I thought he was really good. What the hell has happened to him in the last couple of years? I don't know. He came on 4 minutes later, did a double studs up tackle and got sent off. 4 minutes. There's only 10 minutes left in the game. And they were already down to 10 men.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you doing?
Like, honestly.
That was it. Brentford. They came back from 2-1 down. 3-2. And ended
it
up winning.
I'm telling you, look, if I'm in charge of Everton, I'm literally ringing Sean Dyche and being like, God, we need you here. Like, God, like, did you see what Rondon's just done? Lampard's not even here.
Yeah, I mean, it beggars belief. I must say, though, just as a little aside on this, I have noticed, I don't know about you, but I've noticed a massive uptick in red cards towards the end of the season.
Yeah, people. Leeds got
two red cards in two consecutive games. Rondon, Everton got two in one game. I believe there was another one somewhere else. I can't think. But that is that people? Do you think just going? Oh, I fancy the last couple of games off.
If I was playing a game last weekend, I would be doing everything within my power to get sent off.
But a lot of these, the teams we just mentioned, Leeds, Everton, they're players that are in teams that are in a relegation battle. Surely those are the teams that if I was a fan of Everton or Leeds and I've seen two of each of my players in two games get sent off in the last two games of the season when they're fighting for relegation, I'd be going spare. Leeds haven't got Luke Ayling or Dan James. Key players for them.
Those are ridiculous. They're ridiculous because of the sort of player that they are. If I'm Rondon...
Yeah, fair.
Rondon is... What's wrong? I mean, I don't even know what his contract situation is, but I'm assuming he's leaving this summer. He'll go out the door. But the thing is, though, is I don't think that we are living through normal football times, because when you look at the roadmap of football, it was the players had had the Euros, then it was a full season. And prior to the Euros, the Euros, then we had the full season. So the World Cup. Let me work this out in my head. So, 2018 World Cup.
Yes.
Am I correct? Well done.
Right.
Good on for me. 2019 rolls around, the season begins, and it's disrupted before the end by COVID. The players then do have an amount of time off, but it's not proper time off because they're not going to work, but they can't go away because they're quarantined.
Yeah.
So they're just like us. They were locked in their house, a prison. So it's not a rest. Then they're told the world is still staying shut down, but you're not. You're coming back to your job because people need entertainment and your entertainment. And you're going to have to be tested nonstop, constantly. And you have to take these vaccines and blah, 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 you know, all this. The pressure on a footballer is unreal. Plus, you then had the Euros. So they had to cram in the season at the end. Then they had a mini little break. Then they started the season again. Then the season ended. Then they had a mini little break. It's immediately to the Euros for most players.
Mm.
Then a small break. Now they're playing this season. Some of these players, like Marcus Rashford, like Harry Maguire, you know, these players have played non-stop football basically for 2 years.
Yeah, well, I think until Maguire got injured halfway through this season, he played every game for United, and it was something like 90 odd starts consecutively.
Every game. Started every game for England.
He was
in every training session. He has had no real length of time off.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at these Liverpool players. They've played every possible game they could play, or they will have done, 63 games.
Yeah, so...
And that's not to mention players like Mane and Salah, who would have gone to the Africa Cup of Nations and played games mid-season as well. Obviously, they would have missed some in the Prem during that, but, you know, both Mane and Salah got to the final of the AFCON as well. That's got to be at least another 7-8 games.
What it is basically all I'm saying is if I'm a footballer within these times that we've just discussed, and I'm going in for a 50-50, and I was like, and we're losing the game, and I know that if I get sent off here, I'll be suspended for the last game of the season. So I will be useless. So what the manager will probably do is go, look, you just go home early.
Yeah, yeah.
You can come into training, but you don't have to do pre-match training. You can just come in, you can just keep your fitness if you were, and then you could just start your holiday early. Like if I'm in that position, I'm like, can I just put my holiday request in now? Can I get it in early? Like, yeah.
Totally. Sure.
I wouldn't say no to an additional 2 to 3 weeks off.
No. But it is bonkers, I think, that I can't imagine being a Leeds or Everton fan has been particularly fun the last
couple of years. I'm not saying chin someone. Like, I'm not headbutting anyone because that's a serious... I'm just going... Like, the dream would be two yellows. That's the dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolute dream. You're 1-0 down. You're 70 minutes. You're knackered. you're in a relegation fight. The opportunity arises.
More then, can't you? Oh, that was a soft yellow.
You're on a yellow already, and you're going for a 50-50, and you make it look like you're trying, but actually you're aiming for a shin. You know?
Man alive. Well, that's genuinely what Ayling and Dan James's tackles looked like, to be honest. They were pretty erotic.
Dan James has got an important game for Wales. He can't be playing for bloody Leeds.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
No, no one needs Dan James playing for Leeds. Like, all of them. Gareth Bale is basically retired, except for we just wheel him out for Wales.
Yeah.
And he's world class. Dan James, all of our players, everyone gets like every single one.
So those teams we just talked about, Spurs, Arsenal, Leeds, Everton, Burnley as well, they've all got basically a cup final each towards the end of the season to either stay up or get their Champions League place for next season. And speaking of cup finals, the Europa League final is tomorrow night, Wednesday, the whatever it is. Oh, I started saying the date now. I don't know what it is. Is it the 18th tomorrow?
Yeah, something like that.
That'll be...
There's numbers in it.
There's definitely numbers in it, yeah. The Europa League final will see Rangers in their first European final for 14 years. They'll be playing Frankfurt. Quick one on this. Rangers have had an unbelievable run to the Europa League final. They've beaten the likes of Borussia Dortmund and RB Leipzig, who were two favourites for the competition. Frankfurt, again, done well. They beat West Ham in the semi-final. They obviously had a great season last season to finish in these places. However, they're currently 11th in their league. So for Frankfurt, it is a bit of an all or nothing situation for them to try and get European football again next season. For Rangers, they've obviously lost the Scottish Premier League title. They've relinquished it to Celtic this season, which is a shame for them. However, they've got this final tomorrow and they've got the Scottish FA Cup final on Saturday. So it's a big week for Giovanni van Bronckhorst. He could end the end of this week with a double cup win in possibly one of the best seasons Rangers have had for a long time, or he could end with sweet FA.
It could end. The other way that this could end is Steven Gerrard standing, looking down upon the Rangers squad and van Bronckhorst, a la Marlon Brando in The Godfather, when Vito Corleone looks down at the massacred body and says, "Look how they massacred my child." That's what it is. That's the other visual. Just
amazing. I know we don't normally do predictions on this, but I would really like to see Rangers win that from a British standpoint. Mm-hmm. I also think that I watched one of their I think it was the game against I watched a bit of the game against Leipzig, and I think they've got it in them. I think Bronckhorst has taken them a little bit level up than Gerrard. Obviously, Gerrard's made the foundation of that team and assembled it, but I think that they could do it. I think that'll be exciting. And lastly, before I go, we can't pass up this podcast without mentioning and giving massive props and support to Jake Daniels. If you haven't seen this news story, it broke yesterday. It was everywhere, and rightly so. Rightly so for him, but to be honest, in my opinion, it's sad that we have to do this in this day and age. But Jake Daniels is the 17-year-old player who plays for Blackpool in the Championship, and he yesterday came out as gay. He is the first player to do so since Fashanu in the 90s. So it's been over 30 years since we've had an active, openly gay men's footballer. I think it's absolutely huge.
In the UK.
I think he should be given all the support by all accounts. Blackpool have been incredibly welcoming.
Their reaction has been surprising, to be honest, because they're not a club that I have a lot of faith in.
Yeah.
But they appear to have handled it correctly.
Yeah, and that's good. I think I'd like to think that it's going to pave the way for more people to feel safe, and especially for someone so young to have the strength.
17.
Yeah, and not, I don't want to sound patronizing by saying, but I think it is brave. You know, he's putting himself, even if not for, you know, for coming out publicly, but for putting himself in the spotlight like that. He didn't have to do that, but I am very pleased that he did, because I think it's one of the great stains on the British game that homophobia and racism is still something that is on the terraces and potentially in the dressing rooms. So I hope this is a big first step towards that. And congratulations to him and the Seasiders for making him feel like he can do that and giving him a safe environment to do so. I hope the other 91 league clubs take heed from that.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to add on that, Luke?
The only thing I was going to say is that I hope basically that the rest of the world catches up with my youngest daughter in her worldview, who is light years ahead of pretty much everyone, because she's been raised in an environment where some of our best friends are of different genders and different backgrounds and different ethnicities and different sexualities, and some are non-binary and some are trans, and these are just people that are in our life and always have been. It was always straight or gay, and now as the field has expanded and people are being freer to embrace whatever they want to embrace. Do you know what I mean? If one of my mates went, oh, I'm actually a cucumber, I'd be fine, couldn't give a shit. Are we still going to meet up and be mates? Great, then be you. Fine. And that's the world she lives in. So but she does not get shocked by anything in any way ever. It doesn't make any difference. So she's in school with someone who is trans. And when he transitioned as a younger person, it was a bit difficult for a lot of them. And my daughter just went, yeah, I know. He told me yesterday, I've already got used to calling him by his new name. And that was it.
Great. And that's how it should be. It's exactly how it should be. And I hope that, that sort of attitude becomes infectious.
Yeah, we need to get to the point where no one needs to feel like they should expose their sexuality, because no one has to come out and say they're heterosexual. Why is it different? No,
absolutely. I absolutely agree. Well, I'm not sorry, because it was very poignant, but ended on quite a political political note there, which is very unlike this podcast.
It's very unlike this podcast. Look, Frank Lampard's still a bell end, if that helps anyway.
There we go. That's what I was looking for. I didn't even need to ask you. You just did it. You read my mind.
I mean, I did compare Arsenal to a Parkinson's patient. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true. Arsenal, you know how the bread is buttered. And good luck to all the teams apart from Everton in the last round of fixtures. We'll be back next week where we'll sum up the end of the Premier League season, and we will talk finals.
Nice.
Thank you, Luke. It's been a pleasure.
As always.
And we'll see you next week.
Touchline rap. This is a touchline rap. Touchline rap.
This podcast is a Bendy Geddig Media production.